This episode of the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast has been brought to you by our sponsors at Sweet Cheetah Publicity. Sweet Cheetah is a PR collective that values people over profit. They put a different spin on public relations by working primarily with friends and using all profits to aid charitable organizations. With a roster that includes Jawbox, The New Amsterdams, Brainiac, Get Some, Funeral Date, Damian Dunn, and many more artists, record labels, and podcasts. Sweet Cheetah, that's a great PR cohort. You can find them on social media by simply searching Sweet Cheetah PR, and they'll be there. He's been Tim, I've been Peter, and Sweet Cheetah has been beautiful. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast. I'm your host, Peter, and I am still here. Tonight, it is my distinct honor to bring to you Non-Exister, based in Zurich. They are an industrial metal band set to release their debut album, Demons, today, March 15th. It thrives on the interplay between the energy of electronic music and the catharsis of heavy music, or so their bio says. In my opinion, they have as much in common with Killing Joke and Godflesh as they do with someone of the Nine Inch Nails or Ministry ilk. All four bands I love, but I would opine that Non-Exister is more from the Killing Joke and Godflesh schools. Nick, their vocalist and lyricist, is an old anarchist punk rocker, squatter, grew up on the Crass and, stuff from my world. Nick's a very intelligent man. He's a very left-leaning man, near and dear to my heart. His politics match my politics. Not that, that should take you out of the music. They're very distinct, post-punk informed, industrial / hardcore and metal infused sound is its own animal. But more on that later. If you dig what you hear, if you love the show, if you like the artists that I bring to this table, please like, rate, subscribe, follow me on social media, follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a rating, give us a review, tell your friends. We appreciate you. We love you for it. Nick and I had a very concise, very honest discussion about the state of the world as it stands right now. If politics bore you, we don't get on it for too long. It's mostly about music, about great music, about Non-Exister's music. So without further ado, I give to you, Nick, Non-Exister, Demons, the Book of Very, Very Bad Things podcast.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hey there.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine.
My name's Peter. Nice to meet you. And yours is?
Mine is Nick.
Nick, good to meet you, my friend.
Good to meet you.
just to start off, this record has... It takes me... I'm 47. It kind of takes me back to, like the Wax Trax era of industrial music melded with a lot of the Eastern European industrial I was into at that time period, like Laibach. Mixed with a lot of like doom metal, almost like Godflesh, Neurosis, bands like that. There's an interesting dynamic going on in here with this record, especially with the atmospherics, a lot of dark ambient passages intermingled, almost an anti-pop approach to electronic influenced rock music, if you will. What were the influences that were kind of bubbling about when you were all trying to put this together?
I think the influences were not planned. We work very intuitive, but it's actually two of us who are the band leaders who do the songs. That's Marco, Nizar, and me. And we both are socialized as you by the 90s music, and so by this industrial and alternative metal. And Marco very much is, we're socialized quite similar, but with probably different accents, different heavy points or so Marco is, I was always in goth and dark wave and stuff as well, but for him it was more important, and he was always into alternative metal and industrial and all that as well, but for me it was more important. So we have the same spectrum, but I'm more in the, I was spending more of my time in the harder stuff, and him more of his time in the atmospheric and dark stuff, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, they're all of this young time socialization, musical socialization comes together again. And Marco builds all these soundscapes, he's the electronic maverick who builds all these layers and then lets me surf from them, let's say, yeah, when he's got something built up a little bit. And then we mash up this again, and then it starts to be a back and forth. So I think all these influences come together. But so to answer your question, we didn't think about what influences, but it's definitely what you heard. These kind of industrial and alternative metal and dark pop, dark wave stuff. Yeah.
And what I think really accents the music so beautifully is the fact that the vocal approach, although aggressive in its own right, is not done in such a way that it's a cacophony. Like there's actual singing going on this record, and it's delivered in such a way that it's very impassioned, very Nick Cave adjacent in certain points. It lends how do I put this? There are so many different dichotomies going on within this music. It's dynamic. There's no kind of like reprieve. In every direction you go, there's something happening. There's very little dead space. Now, for as dense as that can be, was that something that was important to you to really make it an immersive experience, and B, a relentless experience?
I think it's part of our personality as artists. We working very intuitive as well, because it was so beautiful to meet each other.
Yeah.
Because we tried this out, and we match extremely. We work very harmonically, very respectfully, very friendly, But we inspire each other a lot, and usually we like what the other one does and inspired us to the next thing. So it was, again, not on purpose, but you hear again very well what's about our influence as well. We were never, although we were always in this harder and darker part, both of us are not people who are closed into a certain or two or three genres. We're listening to a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, I can tell you some of my favorite flamenco fusion artists, you know, so some different styles, as long as it's really authentic, as it's got something, let's say, raw, rough, in terms of being real, you know, not, again, probably really, you know, I think art is really good when it comes from the heart, when it's, when there's something that breaks free, because it needs to break free, and when it's not made up. And I think you can hear the difference. And when it's that, it can belong to genres that are not mine. And because of that, I mean, that's not that far away, what you heard with Nick Cave. It is close to our main styles or main genres. So this, for sure, Tom Waits is a very important artist for me. Nick Cave is an important artist for me. So that's one reason I love this dark, and Marco as well, we love this dark singer-songwriter-ish thing as well, this bluesy stuff. And then the dynamics things, the very, very dynamic, theatralic things almost, we love them a lot, these very strong dynamics, the very emotional things. And I always had part of a leg in theater or movies as well. So it's part of my personality, a little bit the actor as well. So and then Marco loving to build, so he's thinking so much in atmospheres, you know, in emotions when he makes music. And me coming from this acting side, this gives a dramatic thing to music. And but yeah, to be dramatic and dynamic is probably one of the only things we really did on purpose as well, to be even if we did it intuitively. Yeah.
I think that translated really well into all of your music videos, which, you know, some are more like impressionism and some are very like brutal on the nose representations of what the music is painting. One of which a woman was submerged underwater for, what was it, 3 minutes?
Yeah, almost four.
Almost 4 minutes.
Yeah, or over four. I don't know, four, around four. It's quite exactly 4 minutes, yeah.
That's an incredible feat, first off. Yeah. But just for those of my listeners that aren't familiar with the video, the entirety of the video is fixed on her reaction to being submerged. And it just so happens that the way things transpired over the course of this video, it matches perfectly with the tonality and the content of the lyrics. They match so well. It's incredible. And that being actually your most simple music video is also probably the most stark and impactful. I think because of, you know, what's happening, and B, because of the music around it, that yin and yang almost, it's a very stark contrast. It's pretty incredible. That being said, the music videos, who's responsible for all of them?
I mean, again, we, Mark and me together, we do all the creative decisions. But as I am closer to this art form, let's say, I take care of them much more. But I always go back to Marco and I ask him, so we do the decisions together, but it's actually my task mainly in the band. And then there are some videos that are based on an idea we had or something, but very often, as we love to respect, and we know that there's a lot of great artists around, and we love to work with great people as well. There's often just, we do shout outs with our songs to directors, and we go like, hey, who has a good idea and please choose the song you want to choose, because it's what inspires you, what makes you best. And this one was an idea by the director, Elias Resegati. He heard the song, he heard the lyrics, and this was his idea. And we were flashed by the idea. And so I thought, it's incredible, this idea. And then it was pure luck that I knew an actor who is not only an actor, but as well a freediver. Because it is recorded, it is a one take without any cut. It is a one take in real time. And she's really suffering to be able to hold this breath, you know? And nobody else could have done it but somebody who is trained in this, you know? So she could. And that makes it so, so impactful, because she's actually struggling, she's actually suffering, you know?
Yeah.
And what makes it fitting so well to the sound is something that I have to repeat what she said, that anyway, when she is free diving, what is always the task is that on one hand, she has to get have her emotions controlled, have her breath controlled, down, getting everything down and lower it down and get it easy. And on the other hand, the panic breaks through from time to time, and she has to master this panic and this. And as she was listening to the song Beneath the Water,
mm-hmm.
And the song took her with her. So during the verse, she was actually, as it's calmer, she was able to master the whole thing better. And when the sound speeded up, the panic was coming up and she had to fight a lot more. So yeah. That makes it again fitting so well. And then she's an actor on top. So that's really nice.
I find that there's a deep thread of, with your theatricality and your sense of drama, there's a sense of horror, I think, that's interwoven through the lyrics too. Are you a big horror fan?
I'm not a fan in terms of horror movies. Who mainly are there to scare you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fascinated by the dark side, yeah, for sure. But more in an interested, analytical way. I like to understand stuff. It's very deep and interesting. How can these things be, and why can they be? And then from I'm interested in it from a socially critical way, as I'm actually quite a happy person, and I like to have the world going well by things. So there's a socially critical and political side to it as well. Why I want to understand, but I don't feel being you know, the person who knows more than everybody and just is there to preach. I try to think about things and think thoroughly and sincerely about things and even self-critical about things. Where does it touch me as well? And I think that's the horror in it. It's the real horror of the real world that is, yeah, in there.
Yeah, and does that kind of sum up why it's named Demons?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it is. I mean, what happened, it's not a concept album. We didn't write songs under the title Demons or something, but we wrote the whole songs very fast as well, because we matched so well, we were very inspired. So more than half of the album was written within a few months. And so I think the whole thing was created in the same creative phase. And that's why it's almost concept album, where it sticks we're very well together, let's say. And yeah, we're contemplating during the whole album about all kinds of threats or twists, not very nice twists in your head, in my head, in the world. And these are all these demons. I think most of the demons we talk about are the inner ones,
mm-hmm.
But then our inner demons, or the inner demons of some personalities, can be a threat to society, or at least to people around them. So then it gets socially critical and political. And then There are some lyrics that are just about things that can happen to you that are kind of objective demons, like threats from outside. So one song I wrote for a friend who died. So this is just something that happens to you that you have to get over it and do something with it. And then I think the biggest demon that is really an outer one, and this is man-made climate change.
Yeah.
And this is really just a threat that comes kind of to you, even we are the cause. It's still, for the individual, it's the big thing coming towards us and just scaring us, yeah. You know? So it's, I think, all scale of sizes of demons that is this album. Yeah.
And this era right now between climate change and the sad rise of fascism in my country and in Europe, it's happening again. It's disgusting, it's sad, but I mean, that sort of existential dread brings up a question for me that is the only question I ask everyone that comes on the show. I usually save it until later, but it came up naturally, so I'm going to ask it. What is it that terrifies you on an existential level?
For sure. At the moment, I mean, at the moment, really these two things. I mean, the rise up of the extreme right. And to name as well, I mean, the fascism can have different faces. You know, you can give any kind of explanation to fascism. It doesn't have to be traditional European fascism. You know? As you said, it's very dangerous in the U.S. at the moment. Let's really, really hope that doesn't hit, because it's really a threat to the whole world. Than in many countries in Europe. That's really something that scares me a lot. I really hope we get over it. I think there's a big chance. I think it could hit a lot easier in the first half of the 20th century, because people were not aware of it. Mm-hmm. That it could happen. This time it's a little different. You know, at least it has happened 80 years ago. So that's hopefully something that will save us, you know. And
yeah,
let's see. But it's just what I have to hope, so I don't get too scared. And then climate change. Yes, I mean, what's happened? It's going so fast at the moment, and it's going much faster than science said before. And it's so clear there, and we have everything to prevent it, but. It looks like we're not reacting fast enough. But yeah, these are the two things that are, to me at the moment, an existential threat that I, the two main ones that scare me.
Are you seeing, like, it within, you know, Zurich in Europe, are you seeing a lot more apologism, like more people being apologists for the extreme right politically? Where you're from.
Apologizing towards whom?
Well, apologists, as in people who are, you know, making excuses for the far right and ergo actually aligning with them in a more passive manner.
I think this is the biggest error that happens, you know, in at least in real politics, and, you know, it's the bullshit they're doing since 30, 40 years, is that kind of the center thinks if they accept things from the far right and try to mimic them, that they would weaken them. But they do the opposite. They strengthen them by taking these things. And this kind of apologism, you mean, possibly. What Switzerland is very special in this, again, in many things, because Switzerland works a little bit different. So in Switzerland, you have this apologism all the time. And it has, in almost every country, it only has the scary side of strengthening the far right by wanting to do the opposite. In Switzerland, it has a little bit both sides, because as Switzerland is organized in a proportional way throughout the whole governmental state, you know, from the parliament to the government. You never get a president or something. It's always seven ministers, and it's again proportional. We have the far right actually quite strong since almost 20 years. And still, they're a lot weaker than in other countries because they have their 30%, but they have their 30%, and that's it. Yeah. They don't get to make the government, you know? And therefore, it's a little bit more mixed up. There's a lot of people in this party that are still not far right, although the party is very far right already. It's a strange situation. So in Switzerland, there's a lot of this apologism. And in other European countries, yes, it's going to be a lot. I mean, Macron just moved to the right in France, you know, trying to prevent Le Pen. I think he does the opposite. He gives her power with this. And yeah, it depends. It's from country to country. Then on the other hand, there was these large demonstrations in Germany just now. You heard probably, you know, where millions of people suddenly went to the streets against the far right. Yeah. And that gives you hope again. I don't know. But you reckon we have one song that talks exactly about this, which is Storm.
Yeah? Well, yeah, I mean, that I'm actually just hearing you mention the way your country works. It makes me jealous because in the United States, we're almost set up to be a totalitarian state. I mean, we do have our quote unquote vote, the Senate, and that's supposed to actually be the governing body of the country. But you have this man right on top that's in charge of the military, presumably. And that's the person that can really change the tone of the entire country and ergo the tone of the world.
Yep.
Let's say Trump makes it into office again. That figurehead emboldens other nations to follow suit.
Yeah.
And that could become very tragic.
That's real threat to the whole world. I mean, this person is such a impossible person to have any kind of power, you know? And it's such a clown and such a dangerous, horrible figure. But we agree on this anyway. But let's go back to the system. I mean, to us. I mean, especially. I mean, I have a lot that we can improve in Switzerland. It's not ideal at all. But I think of the existing systems, it's probably the best one, and that's just a luck, you know, because it's just the most democratic one. Although it's not democratic enough, but if we look at the United States from Europe, I mean, already this system that you have only two parties,
yeah,
who you have to be part of one of the parties. You can't have a third opinion or something. Yes, you can, but you don't have a chance on anything. So, and then this doesn't look democratic to us, you know, because you don't have actually an open field for different opinions, you know. And then on top of it, that these two parties have each their candidate, and these candidates are elected within the parties, not by the whole population, is extremely undemocratic again, you know. In any means of democracy that we understand, any presidential candidate would have to be presented from the beginning to the whole population. You have 10 candidates and they run in front of the whole population, and then you get votes, and from these 100%, you know, one only gets two, so he's out, you know, and another one. But the ones that are left within by being voted by the whole population, they do the last vote, and not the two that are elected by a party, you know, that is already there. That's kind of, for us, it seems very undemocratic what happens in the United States. And I think a lot of people in the United States agree, but you have a big problem. The first, you know, the founding fathers, or what you call them, you know, they wanted to protect it so well from a fraud or something that the levels to change these laws are so high that you can't change it. And you're back with an election law that had its sense 200 years ago, but that's just is nothing for the modern world.
Exactly. It's so antiquated that it's impenetrable.
Yeah.
But to kind of like wrap that up and go back into the music, I think your opinions and your feelings about the world are really well represented within the body of this work. It makes me kind of wonder what touring is going to look like for you, going country to country and kind of like seeing this swirling mass of different opinions and kind of facing that going forward as a musician on tour, going country to country, state to state.
I don't know. It will be interesting, you know, because I'm coming now, you know, Michael was working more in the, let's say, classical music industry with mm-hmm. his former projects. And I'm coming from the squats. I'm coming from the left political scene. I'm coming from the DIY scene.
Oh, you're an old school punk rocker then. I could smell it on you. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was always playing in places that were friendly to my opinions anyway, you know, that were anti-fascist, that was clear. Now we're going, we absolutely want to play these little and by heart done left and squat clubs as well, and scale our show, try to scale it up and down, but we will play the classical stages as well. And what is clear to me, I mean, I'm a political person. I'm not going to hide my opinion, but I'm probably not going to, we have our art to speak. But what is still clear, I mean, let's say Poland, you know, Poland is a country that is interested in us. Music wise, it will be beautiful to play there, but it is a country as well that has a lot of right-wing people. Has a lot of great people as well.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens when we play there in a metal venue. I don't know. Nobody of us will hide who we are, and we will not accept a certain public. No, there's a point where I would stop a show, and we will for sure address the things. But I think it's. Yeah, that's you're going to be yourself, and you're going to do, and then I think the venues, they have they're known as well a little bit for what they are. So
yeah,
I think it doesn't happen so easy that you really play in the wrong place. So because
not in this day and age.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not as if you guys are like the Crass either, where like you're coming out there and like Penny Rimbaud and completely rubbing your opinion in everyone's face. I think it's kind of like it's in the music, but it's not spelled out. You have to really peel back the layers before you start to even remotely get a whiff of what's really going on, what these lyrics are about. And they're open to interpretation. And yeah. I think, in essence, even though my heart is very much in the hardcore punk that I grew up on, and the messages therein, I think you tend to catch more flies with honey, as it were. You know what I mean? You're going to attract more people with something that's a little more universally accepted. And then when they get to the root of it and go, oh, okay, all right, now it makes sense to me because this person wasn't trying to force it on me, but I like what they're doing. So they're going to be more apt to accept it.
Yeah, I think as well. I mean, you got to. It's you can have more effect if you talk to people respectfully than if you just shout it into their faces, for sure. But I agree, and I think it's the better way to. I mean, let it would be. Something that I would wish, or that we would wish all for our music, that it makes people think and get to conclusions and if that can be an effect, that would be beautiful. Yeah.
I foresee it. I mean, I think the landscape of independent music right now, I think, is certainly lacking, not in heavy music, but in music that kind of allows itself to be genreless yet fit in so many different places.
Yeah.
Because post-punk is exploding again. It's as, almost not quite as big as it was in the 1980s, because let's face it, the Cure were on TV when I was a kid. You know, like post-punk was big when we were kids. Yeah. But it is in the underground making a massive comeback. But there's a lack, I think, of good electronic infused aggressive music. It's not really happening like it used to back in, 1996, 95, 94. And you're doing it in such a way that someone who likes post-punk will really find something to enjoy there too. Have you been getting a lot of feedback from those circles, from, the dark wave post-punk circles, or more of the metal circles, or is it like a mixed bag?
At the moment, it's a mixed bag, but the thing is, we're really just starting. You know, as you saw, it's we're doing on our own label, mm-hmm. So we have a good crew of people who helps us with great work, but it's us who do all the work. So therefore, we have a certain limit of work power that we have, and therefore we. I mean, we had the album, we had the set practically finished when the pandemic hit. So we went to the studio, when we worked in the studio and made the album, mm-hmm. and we wanted to go live. So it didn't affect us so much as artists, because we still had a lot of work. We could go to the studio and work there. So yeah. That was nice. But so we were in with this, then we did the videos and the whole things and tried to get the team together, to get good PR and marketing and stuff, and try to build this up. So we didn't play much yet, and we're mainly pushing the singles out and the videos out now. So the reach is not that big yet, and this is now changing. We can feel as we pushed out the album now. The interview requests come in, and we have a lot more of reach, I think, that will come now, and then we will see more how much. At the moment, it's what we can see is that the people who like us are dedicated into this thing. It's not like, yeah, you got another pop song that is good. For our stuff, you have to be into it a little bit, and that's beautiful. It's always nice. They're dedicated fans who really love it, but I still can't say if they come more from this or from this side,
I think it's going to be really, what's going to be really interesting for you guys is the fact that, even though I'm saying these certain genres are becoming big again, being an older father, I have a 5-year-old son and I have a 23-year-old daughter. My 23-year-old daughter likes good music. But genre to people in her generation means almost nothing.
Yeah.
It's either I like this or I don't like this. They don't have to buy into a lifestyle in order to like music. That's neither good nor bad. It's just not my experience. It was very different when I was a kid, obviously. But you're coming into an era where nothing's out of style anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of a beautiful thing. I think these Gen Z kids kind of have it all over us.
It can be kind of, sorry, I interrupted you. Or
no, please.
Okay, it can be on some, more like a little bit whatever, on some part of the people. But on the other hand, I see it as a beautiful thing in many things as well, in people who are dedicated and really interested in arts. I remember in our squats, it was punk and hardcore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was living in one of the, and probably the founding cities of techno, of good techno, of good electronic music. And I was just too stubborn. I was a punk.
Yeah, of course.
And I missed actually the birth and I was living where it was born of a beautiful culture, you know, and that I'm into now. And that was really very, very closed down kind of in our punk scene, in our hardcore scene. And it's beautiful now to see that they're still in the squats now. Zurich is still a very active and good squat and DIY scene, and very political as well, very dedicated. And the young people, they're still so dedicated in punk and all this stuff, but in other stuff as well. And they just, but in a really good way. It's not that they're not interested, and that's why, whatever. No, they're just more open, and they put it all together. And they're even, you know, even if you show up, so many generations show up at the door of a party that the 20-year-olds organized, and nobody looks at nobody kind of strange. Just everybody just shows up, and everybody's just everybody, you know? It's kind of, it's so nice. Like, there's no question who you are. As long as you behave and you're cool, that's nice, you know? And they do different parties of different genres and different cultures. And, yeah, it's really nice. It's a good thing as well.
Do you think that there's, right now in your country, a scene for what you're doing, or at least an outlet for it, with the clubs and the squats and all of that? Is there enough of an infrastructure for an independent band to actually make a go of it there?
Yes, I think so.
That's wonderful.
But then I don't know. We are often, that's a little bit why I say we want to be able to scale our show up and down, because I think the main show, as it is cinematic, what we're doing will be probably too much of technique for just any kind of a DIY club or squat. So we want to scale it up and down as well in terms of the light show and stuff. And it's a beautiful thing to do. Mm-hmm. But for the more usual stages, we want to have quite some lights and stuff and things. So we want to do both. And then let's say Switzerland's got a little bit a speciality as well. That is, Switzerland is a country that doesn't believe in itself so much in these things. Let's say you don't get big in Switzerland if you're not doing a very Swiss thing. If you're doing an international thing as we do, you get big in the other countries, and then you come back. You know?
I get it. There's a, it was like that in the States briefly. If it got big in Europe with the British invasion in the 1960s, then it got big here. Jimi Hendrix had to go to England to get big in the United States. Yeah. It's kind of unfortunate that that's still kind of the case in any arena, but that's interesting.
I mean, if you live in Berlin, I mean, Berlin is very, believes in itself, you know?
Oh yeah.
If you're from Berlin, you can get big in Berlin, and then but if you're from Zurich, you'd rather get big in Berlin and then come back to Zurich.
but the way you're trying to scale your show, just an aside, I'd seen Skinny Puppy back in like 1991, Last Rites era. And I'd seen them play this little tiny club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, called the Chameleon Club. Very small DIY hardcore spot. 2 weeks later, I saw them play in a small amphitheater.
Yeah.
And they scaled their show, but there was something about it that, I don't know, even in the Chameleon Club, it was too big almost for that little space. I think mainly because Ogre was doing it an awful lot. He had like entrails wrapped underneath saran wrap, and he's pulling it out. Like he was incredible live. But if you can do that successfully, that alone is a feat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We don't know if we can. We'll try.
Oh, I think it's doable. Just as long as, I don't know, whatever your concept is, as long as it translates to 10 people or 2,000 people, you're going to be fine. So you're self-releasing this completely, your own record label. Are you producing vinyl CDs? How are you going to go about the physical aspect of the media?
We for sure are doing vinyl because we're vinyl lovers. It's just a thing. Yeah. We can't put out an album without vinyl.
Yeah.
And then sorry for the CD lovers, but we're putting out the CD as well because we have to.
Yeah, yeah. But if you look behind me, I've been collecting since the 80s. I mean, yeah. Legitimately. Yeah. I think there's something about, especially music like yours, when it's humming off of a turntable, it lends an extra depth to it and more of a presence to it. You get to have a relationship with the music, I think, on a deeper level, which is the one thing that makes me sound like an old man, like, it sounds better on vinyl. But it does. There's something, it's more natural.
I often ask myself, I mean, I hear it too, but you know how it is. Did you ever do a blind test with beers? You know, at mm-hmm. first you say this one is the best one, and then let's see which one you point on when you're blind testing. So that's the big question. But it's not so important to me if it's true that it really sounds better. Mm-hmm. And the digital world has gotten so good that I think it's not sure. But what makes it a different relationship for sure is that you have this beautiful sleeve in your hand. You look at it, you know, it's get already there, and you open it, and then you put it on, and it's not playing for that long. So you're really going to listen to music. You know, you'd rather sit down on the sofa and really listen to it if you do this than if you play it from a playlist.
No? Yeah, and you're not driving in your car turning a record over. I mean, that's, no one's doing that. It's a 100% captive audience at that point, where everything is intentional, everything is conscious and tactile, and you're present. That's why I fully believe, as much as I love film and the written word, music is the most immersive of the arts.
It's for sure the most direct art. Yeah. It goes directly to your heart. It's mm-hmm. It reaches your brain after. It enters by the heart and reaches your brain after. Whilst other, as you said, you know, I love the written word, but it enters by the brain and then goes to the heart. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's nothing better or worse, but that's very, very, it's a speciality of music that's extremely touching.
Do you remember the first time you felt that with music, being a small child, whatever, the first time you were really struck by a song, by an artist?
No, I don't remember the first time. No, sorry.
That's a shame. I don't, obviously there's no way for us to really remember that first time, but I remember the first conscious decision I made as far as taste is concerned. I was very small. I was about 4 or 5 years old, and it was T-Rex, Mark Bolan and T-Rex.
Okay.
My dad's record collection. Yeah. And he put on the slider. It was the first time I ever heard the slider. And instant, like, gravitation, as if forced by something ethereal and godlike to just give me that. I want to be one with that. Yeah. And it was from there on that I became a devotee of not just Mark Bolan and T-Rex, but music as the altar at which I worship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my spirituality, truly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is to me for sure as well. I mean, there's loads of stuff that I can say that I just remember within my history, you know, that the things that ripped me, but I don't know where it started. But that's a little bit my problem with my memory as well. It's often not that good. No.
It doesn't have to be, though. I think that's part of it too. Taste is very subjective. So you could like very generic pop music, and it doesn't make you wrong for liking it, because I don't.
Yeah.
Those experiences are still valid. But again, I want to bring it back to this record, and how that pertains to it is that there is something kind of timeless about this record too. Like, it's not tied to now, it's not tied to 20 years ago. There's something that it exists in its own kind of space where nothing dates it to any specific era. What it does have, I think, is an almost dark cabaret quality that I think you spoke to earlier with the theatrical elements. I very much sense that, like, the, not a concept, but certainly a spiritual core to all of the songs that tie them together. It's not a concept, but it's an emotional sort of like vibe, like thread through all of them, like a gossamer that envelops all of them. They're all coming from that same sort of place, but would you, you'd say that has more to do with your partnership with the other musician in your enclave than anything you're thinking outside of it, though? Like, it's something that's special that just happens when you two are together.
I think there's for sure something special happening when we are together. We feel both this really. I mean, we've known each other for quite a while, and always sometimes talked about it. We could do something in this direction. When we finally started it, we realized that none of us could make this music alone. Mm. Huh? So we often say, in our case, it's again one of these one and one is three or even five. You know, and. So the whole thing is, I think, because we feel similar about music, but he's got very much his identity, how he builds soundscapes and stuff, and I have my identity with my theatralic singing and approach and going and I'm very content related in the lyrics, no? So it's, I've got, as I have concerns about this world, and I have things I want to think about and I want to talk about. I think this is, they work well together and give kind of an own, you know, as it fits well, it becomes to be an own body, an own thing. And as we're not looking, I mean, don't have to look for lyrics, you know, oh shit, we need lyrics now. Or, we need another song, but we don't have an idea. And then we start to try to vent. No, it really comes out of something that has to come out. And I think that's the reason why it has really a personality, because it is an animal that starts to live between the two of us, you know, this little monster that gets its life from the both sides and really is an own little organism. So
it's funny too, because you say it's just the two of you that are really like manufacturing all of this, bringing it to life, but there is a distinct aspect of the sound of the music that would almost make me believe that it came together out of just a few guys in a room playing together, jamming. That couldn't possibly be the case per se, but there is a shorthand, I think, there that allows you to make it sound that immediate and that you know, improvised almost in a way.
One thing is that it's probably two things that when I say we work very intuitive, is we kind of work improvising as well quite often. It's often that Marco comes with, or most of the time, not always, Marco comes with something that is a raw, a rough structure, or just a part that he was, hey, let's do something with that. That sounds great. Sometimes it's very elaborated already. And he says, hey, you want to do it? What do you think? I like it. Do you like it? And then usually I say, hey, open the mic. And then I just sing. Mm-hmm. and start to search for ideas, because I love to record anywhere. I'm a stage beast, kind of. I'm not shy, kind of. And the second thing is, I experienced a lot that it's really difficult to, often when you sing and when you improvise and you find something, it can happen and you thought it was good and it can happen, you can't get it back. So I use to always turn on the mic when I'm searching for ideas for vocal lines, and then I sing all these things, and then often I think I gave Marco different options what we could do with it, but sometimes he takes them all or many of them and says, hey, but they fit together, and he does something with them, you know, and does arrangements with them. So I'm inspired intuitively, I'm improvising, and he's kind of improvising again with my improvisations. I think that's
where it comes from then. Yeah.
No, it's not made up, you know, by a plan. It's very much coming intuitively. And the second part is probably that we come with quite finished songs to the studio. They are demos. You could push them out like this. You would have to mix them a little bit, master them a little bit, but they're finished demos. But we asked not just random any musician to work with us. We asked musicians that we respect a lot, that we like as persons and as artists. So when we're in the studio, we open the book again and say, hey, what are you doing with that? And it's more on the details, but there's then quite some guitar lines added, other ones thrown out. It's still us who decide finally, but they're really invited to collaborate, and it improves things again because you get more good people working on it, and that's often very intuitive as well. You know what they play because they hear it and they go like, and then we keep it or we take it. Yeah, it's a little bit. I think that's all this. That's why it sounds alive.
Yeah. Yeah, and it feels live too. Not just doesn't just sound that way. Music gives you impressions. It's not just the sonics. And I picked a lot of that up in the inference, and it also makes me wonder lyrically. It's not like spelled out lyrically, but you know, like my idol's Killing Joke. I feel like there's a spiritual thread interwoven through this record as well. Are you a spiritual person or have any leanings in that direction?
Not at all.
Okay.
But probably in another way, let's say, you know, if you would ask me where I would position myself, I would say I'm an agnostic atheist. You know? Quite convinced that there is no God, but I can't even be sure about this, you know?
Yeah.
I know from a philosophic way, I can't change my point of view. So I can't actually check if my observations are right, you know? But in these terms, I'm not spiritual at all. I very much believe in really thinking and looking at things. You know, that's why science is the most convincing to me, because it's the only side that throws everything away. If they find something that doesn't fit to the form of theory, they just kill the whole theory and start again.
Yeah.
That's a very, you know, that's very convincing that they're really thinking, not trying to push some strange ideology out. You know, but This need to really think thoroughly and sincerely about things and try to get to the bottom of things, and as well try to be humble and honest enough to say, I can't explain it, I can't see it, or I didn't get there yet. Or, you know,
yeah.
This is kind of a spirituality probably as well, but more philosophic spirituality instead of a religious spirituality. Not a spirituality in terms of thinking there is a higher thing and trying to get a connection to this, but to get a connection to your abilities of getting to the heart of things, and to your courage to actually do so.
And the way I think I look at spirituality, I don't look at it as a structure or a codified belief system. To me, it's just it's the way I emote, the connection I feel with other people. I think that's deeply spiritual, without being a religion or having any sort of, you know, bent towards one church or building or person with the outfit on. I mean, that's just a shirt. That doesn't make you ordained by anything, you know? But I think what you said is incredibly honest, and probably the most honest you can be is to say agnostic. I don't know. And neither do you or you or anyone else. It's the truth.
And if we get back to, you know, to the far right or to any kind of threatening extremists, I mean, if this would be, if people would be able, all people would be able to do, to say this, we wouldn't have all these problems, you know? Yeah. It's all these sorry fucking assholes who think they really know it, and they want to put it on everybody else, you know? And it's like, what? Why? How dare you? Thinking you got the eternal truth. What? Come on. And it should fit for me as well. Why? You know? Like,
does that even sound fun to you? Like, it doesn't sound fun to me. It doesn't sound free or human.
No. It's horrible.
Truly. If I were in a room full of people who felt, thought, and looked exactly the way I do, I would lose my mind and probably run directly out of said room. Like, I don't want anything to do with that. the most beautiful part of being alive is what makes us different. And unique, and it's inspiring. And when I listen to this record and I hear these different like elements of I hate to even call it genre, just different aspects of music in general. It's symphonic in its way, and I could tell it's an amalgamation of experience and understanding of sonics and of what makes you enjoy music. That makes it a very honest interpretation, which I very much dig. So that being said, where do you see the band going next sonically after this record is buttoned up and put out into the world? What do you think the next mountain is that you're going to climb sonically together?
What we just were talking about in the last, now we were not doing so much new stuff for a while because we're occupied with all the finishing of this work. But what we definitely, now we started again, we have a few new songs working on stuff. And what we definitely reckon is that we can be even less timid in terms of exaggerations and dynamic and theatricality and what the voice does and stuff. It's a little bit, probably a little bit the Swiss guys in us, you know, that are a little bit on the break first, you know, and looking a little bit where to go still, even if we're quite intuitive. And feeling now, and me coming from the punk scene, you know, putting out your voice, so working so much with your voice, what I always love to do. Probably we feel now that we want to go farther, even, you know, in terms of respect. Respecting song structures less and going, letting even more get driven by this, you know, let's see where it takes us, you know? I mean, we did it a lot already, but that's one of the things. I think we're going to test it out even more in terms of extremes. That's one thing. And then we started to do another, a different way of work now. We started to go to the studio with some songs a lot earlier, with the musicians, with our co-musicians, and start to grab samples from them, you know, and work with them electronically again and stuff. So not only in the last phase of the recording, having their inputs, but starting to go like, hey, we need stuff in this direction. What is your creative, what comes out of your guitar and of your bass and of your drum, and starting to work with them on an early phase. And that's very interesting as well. And using them much more as our actors as well, let's say, if we're directors, you know, and not I think I described it. Yeah.
I mean, the picture you're painting, I mean, it seems like, you know, you're building music in a different manner than just, okay, you do a 4/4 beat and you like, and go. There's a lot more intention, I think, to the way you're constructing this, the way you're explaining this, actually. So I'm very interested to hear what the next record's going to sound like. It's probably going to sound even more alive than this one, if it goes in that direction, which I'm sure it will. So that being said, if you were to leave my listeners with, you know, a thought, an idea about what they can expect from the rest of this record, how would you alliterate that to them?
Probably you got to ask me a little bit different again. I don't really get
sure,
it.
Sure. If you were to be tasked with, you know, explaining what this record means to you, sonically, emotionally, how would you put that to someone who's never heard it?
I mean, for us personally, it's really just, I mean, like always, I think for a musician, it's our baby. It's our baby of the moment. So it means a lot to us. And there's a lot of us in there. As we said before, and as it's really an honest contemplation about what bothers us or what interests us about the world. But if I would have to describe how it sounds, it's dark. It's deep, it's melancholic, it's dramatic, it's impacting, it's philosophic, it's disturbing, possibly, and it is, let's say, an offer to get emerged, and an offer to think about and or feel about things, about yourself and about society and the world around you and about what's happening at the moment.
That's incredible. I couldn't ask for a better ending to a podcast. That's incredible. When the vinyl comes out, let me know, because I need a copy of it immediately.
It's on pre-order.
It is.
A nice detail that we didn't mention within the. I was just too slow there in the moment. Then we started to talk about other things. The vinyl, as we're vinyl lovers, is really it's a gatefold double LP, and there's an additional song on it, or an additional track. Let's say it's not a song; it's really a noise track. Mm-hmm. But there is an additional track on the vinyl that will only be on vinyl and nowhere else. That will not be streamed, that will not be on CD. It's only there. And it is actually an extension of 2048 of the last song.
You don't get the complete experience unless you get the vinyl. That's even better. I love that.
Exactly.
That's
wonderful. And another little detail, or two little details that are probably nice for you and for the listeners, is that Kater, which is a very special song, has its own video. That's going to be the craziest video that we ever did. It's a wild ride through Berlin. I mean, Kater already is quite a Berlin track of its thing, and it's a wild ride through Berlin. It's really, really fun, and I mean, this is the only kind of fun track we have. It's ironic. It's still And it's really a fun ride. And it's going to come out, this video is going to come out after the album in May as the cherry on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good thing to mention. And with the album, as we were talking a lot about, and I'm actually quite happy that you asked me about, you know, the rise up of the extreme right, because it bothered me a lot as well. And there's a beautiful video done by the director of How Do You Dare, which is a very political one as well. Mm. Dave Bellavent, he's just finishing a beautiful great video for Storm, which is the song about the rise up of the far right. And this is going to come out with the album.
Oh, God, this is great. So, I'll tell you what, for an independent release, you guys put so much effort into every aspect of it. Videos, which there are plenty of them. The vinyl presentation, you've spared no expense. It's awe-inspiring to me that you can really take a vision like that and make manifest in such a tactile and such a grand way. It's inspiring.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Love to hear that. I'd love to hear so much understanding for what we're doing. You know, that's really beautiful, having somebody who digs it and who understands so much what we're doing. That's beautiful.
We're from a similar place, politically and musically. So I mean, that would make sense. But yeah, I can't wait to hear the next record that you come out with after this. So when the next record's coming down the pike, don't forget about me. Come back on. We'll do this again.
We will. We'll for sure not forget about you.
Appreciate
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. You have a great night.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
If you ever want to do something with us again, just reach out.
I will. Yeah, we'll get together soon.
Thank you very much.
Take care of yourself.
Great pleasure.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
What can I say? It's always a pleasure to deal with someone so affable, so literate, so connected to their art. I don't know what else to say. I love this band. I hope you do too. Demons is out today. Go buy it. He's been Nick of Non-Exister. I've been Peter. You've been beautiful. And from 3:33 a.m. Productions, this has been The Book of Very, Very Bad Things Podcast. Take care, everybody. Have a great night. Yeah.